This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hello, how's it going? Good day again. I am Tristan H. Cockcroft. This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. We are back. We are here to preview the weekend, talk about some trades, talk about a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm very excited to be joined today again by AJ Mass, my good buddy and colleague. How you doing, AJ?
I'm doing well, Tristan. Long time no see.
Long time no see, indeed. I hear we might have met up at some point recently and watched some scouting of Houston Astro pitchers firsthand, maybe?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Fires! Fires! How are you doing? How are you doing, the listener? Let's get right into it. We got plenty to cover. Let's get to the buzz. Now, since it's a busy day, I should mention that we have everybody here. Mike Robbie behind the glass, Kyle Soppy, Leo Howell joins us today. Leo on board with us. So it's a lot of baseball talk, and I want to start with relievers. Because why not start with the end of the game first, AJ? Let's go with a closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
You'll see where I'm going with this. We had plenty of trades lately, and I think a lot of them, the intrigue is really the bullpen arms who have been affected right now. We're going to see some of these big moves happen over the weekend. The trade deadline, the non-waiver one at least for Major League Baseball, will arrive on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Now, in ESPN Standard Leagues, the trade deadline will come on the following Friday. That's Friday, August 4th. So you have 8 days from this point to make trades in ESPN Leagues. But the MLB one is Monday. We've seen a few moves recently, and I'm going to throw a few of these at you, AJ, because of the changes potentially in these bullpens. We saw Pat Neshek get traded by the Phillies to the Colorado Rockies late yesterday. In fact, heading back from the game yesterday, I got the little alert that, oh no, he's leaving. Anthony Swarzak goes from the White Sox to the Brewers. And here's the one I want to focus on first, is San Diego trades Brandon Maurer, their closer to this point this season, and Ryan Buchter to the Kansas City Royals. And that kind of leads to a question about the Royals bullpen and the Padres bullpen. AJ, so it's two parts. Kelvin Herrera, do you think there's any concern here? I do think he's going to hold that role, but I want to get your perspective on if there's any concern, if Maurer's got value. And in San Diego, where do we go from here?
Well, in terms of Kansas City, I mean, we're talking about a team that has history of having the seventh inning guy, the eighth inning guy, the ninth inning guy. So I don't really see this as red flags for Herrera. This is kind of just setting up something that's familiar to this organization. And so the fact that it's not, you know, oh my gosh, Herrera has competition. It's Herrera has someone who's going to set him up now. I think we're going to keep things going in terms of that. But if you have Maurer, I wouldn't necessarily get rid of him either. This is not a situation, you know, like Robertson going to the Yankees where it's like, well, he's never going to get us any saves. I think Maurer could get saves in this situation, but he'll definitely slot into a setup role here. In terms of San Diego, Brad Hand, he got a save against the Mets yesterday. Looked okay in the process. It wasn't really a high-pressure situation, and it was the Mets. But he could definitely be out in the next few days, too. I mean, why not? Clean house completely here. I don't necessarily think that he's locked in. I'll take the saves this week, and I'll see where he ends up going forward.
So to quickly note on the Royals here, they're actually now in the driver's seat for the second wild card spot. Lo and behold, I love this move for Kelvin Herrera's value. I think that this kind of cements his status as remaining as the closer, because why would you trade for a setup man and attempt to go all in? Why would you trade Kelvin Herrera? I know in the preseason there was a little worry there. But AJ, let's expand on this San Diego situation, because I feel like, at least kind of gauging the chatter out there, there's a lot of excitement about who's going to close for the Padres going forward. And I'm with you. I love Brad Hand. If Brad Hand was the closer for the Padres, I'd make the case he's a top 10 fantasy reliever going forward. I think he has that kind of upside. But I'm with you that I also think there's a high likelihood he gets traded. Is there anyone else you'd speculate upon, or do you think this bullpen is just not worth it?
Well, I mean, someone's going to get saves. They're not going to go winless the rest of the way. So there's saves to be had here. I mean, if you have someone with a good enough K-9 rate, who might step in like a Phil Maton, then yeah, I might speculate on him. I mean, he's young and he's probably not going to be traded. So I think he's the guy to speculate on if you're going to speculate. But I think Hand is probably going to be much more valuable should he stay. It's just a question of whether he'll stay or not, and I don't see a reason why the Padres wouldn't try and trade him.
So beyond just Maton you mentioned there, I'll throw out Kirby Yates has some great numbers. I know Carter Capps was a guy we were talking about in the preseason who could certainly be an elite fantasy closer. If the guy could ever stay healthy, he's got the kind of numbers that look like a top 10 potential guy. So I get it that people are getting excited about the Padres. But the big concern I have here is I feel like a lot of these bullpens are opening up these massive craters and are not going to be anywhere near as valuable as people expect. So I just say be careful. I'm adding Hand. I don't think it's going to last for all that long. I'll shift to Chicago for another example, AJ. Do you think there's anybody worthwhile in Chicago now? They've traded David Robertson. They traded Swarzak, who got a save the other day. Who's closing there now, and do you want him?
Yeah, and they traded Dan Jennings to Tampa Bay. So he's going to move over there. It's Clifford. Why not? I mean,
yeah, Tyler Clifford. Would you add him? What's the context in which you would add Tyler Clifford?
If I need to say it, just because he's de facto right now, but it's not like he's super high up on my list. He's certainly in my bottom five in terms of guys who are closing at the present moment in time. But if I need saves, I have to take them where I can get them, especially if I'm losing them from someone like Maurer, who's going somewhere else and is going to be a setup guy.
I think Texas might be the only place where there's just so much uncertainty where I might put those guys behind Clipper, because at least it looks like there's only one man left. But I don't know, on skills and the way the Clipper has performed. Remember, I watch him a lot with the Yankees in the eighth inning. He was a mess the past month. I'm sorely tempted to rank him the 30th best fantasy closer. Philly, let's focus on that quickly. With Neshek gone, do you think this is a plus for Hector Neris, or do you think no real big deal here?
I think no real change here. Do I think that Joaquin Benoit is like the greatest setup man? No, but can he do a decent enough job so that if they happen to have one of these one run games, he can hold that lead? Sure. The Phillies are going to either win big or not win. I don't know that there's a lot of saves here. I think it's kind of going to be like last night's game. You're going to get the 9-0 games where there's no save to be had, and you're going to get those late inning, maybe bottom of the eighth, where they take the lead, and then they really just need the guy to come in at that point, so it doesn't matter who's setting them up.
Neris, a 2.13 ERA and 13 appearances. He's 3-for-3 in saves in the past month, so I'm with you. I think there's some value here. I don't think it's going to be elite by any means. I don't think there's a huge change. I like the guy. I kind of wish the Phillies could give him some more opportunities. I feel like he's a little bit more appealing than your Matons and Yates and Clippards and the like, but, oh, man, it's not fun scraping the bottom of the barrel for saves. Among other bullpens, I want to touch just briefly on Oakland's because Mr. Santiago Casilla, he's an adventure, isn't he?
Casilla gets the chance, to be the guy without any pressure going on around him. There's no threat anymore of anyone taking over, and he's stinking up the joint. So I don't know what's going on with him. It's just not pretty.
Certainly isn't. And I guess he's the guy because there's not much else there. But it's another situation.
And it's not like Doolittle's doing the job in Washington.
No. Oh, geez. I know. Yeah, you were pointing that out to me yesterday. Yeah, what do we call that? It's a non-save situation where he doesn't pitch well. I believe we call that the Dante Fuentes, if we still have that.
It's another Dante Fuentes.
I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Olé!
Oh, love it. Zach Britton had one of those too, by the way. All right, let's get off the closers here and get to the other trades because a lot's happening. Trevor Cahill also involved in that trade going to the Kansas City Royals. Cahill, AJ, I know you and I have even discussed Cahill's prospects when he was in Petco. Any value in Kansas City?
There's a little bit of value. I mean, certainly he's going to get the little better support in terms of offense and a team that can close out games and might be in a better position to win. I have him before the trade at my number 29 starter. A lot of that was the ballpark. And the fact that I had a feeling that whoever remained in San Diego in the starting rotation would probably do well. in terms of an under-the-radar kind of pick. I don't think I'm moving him all that much right now, maybe up a few spots, but he's a number three starter in fantasy for me.
That's a generous ranking. I think it's higher than I'd go in the American League, but I like the boldness. You need to point out here, or we need to point out here, that it's a 27% K rate and his ground ball rate's 57. That's one of those combinations you do want to latch onto. So the AL-only owners shouldn't sleep on this guy. I feel like he's not one that I'd go all in on if I'm still sitting back and waiting with a lot of fab to blow. But, AJ, if you have 100, what would you throw on him?
Well, you know, it's so hard because there's still some trades that I think might be made to, like, bring in players, especially crossing leagues. I still think there's a lot of trades to happen. So I don't really necessarily going to go more than 15 on them. But it's just because I need to save for that one big guy who might still come in the next few days.
It's so funny that 15 was the exact number I was thinking of. I might bump it up to 30-ish if nothing else really exciting comes across. Eduardo Nunez, I'd have to assume, is going to be one of the more attractive AL-only bids as of right now. That could change. But Nunez gets traded to the Red Sox. And, AJ, the reason I think this becomes a big deal is that Nunez, at least in terms of how the lineup shakes out, I think a lot of people will assume he takes over a third base where Rafael Devers comes up, hits a home run, looks like he's adapting quickly to the major leagues. What do you feel about the values of these two guys? Are you still in on Devers?
I'm still in because they brought him up, and obviously they needed to get a plan B and a veteran. I thought it would be Asdrubal, but it's not. And it's Nunez, and Nunez is a better player, which, you know, top 100 hitter as far as I'm concerned, rest of the way. If he had stayed in San Francisco, I think his value actually goes down, because he's going to be one of these utility guys who plays sporadically and spelling them. You know, Devers will sit against tough pitchers, and they're not forced to play him every day now, which I think is actually better for his value, that they can pick and choose the spots to use him. I mean, quite the day for the young players with Devers, Moncada, and Brinson all going deep for their number one home run. It's kind of an interesting night.
And I'm glad to see Brinson up, by the way. The fact you mentioned that is that we were talking about Brett Phillips the other day, and now Brinson's here. So exciting time for young players. We might even see Ahmed Rosario come up for the Mets sometime in the next week. So keep an eye on that. At least it sounds like it's approaching. Nunez, I do think right now is going to be the all-in bid. I'd feel like right now I'd throw a $35 or $40 bid on him out of 100, and it might soar up to something like, you know, 60, 70 if I had the money left, depending on what else comes over so far. But I like him for stolen bases. I've pointed out how rare they are. These are stolen bases off the waiver wire just coming into AL-only leagues.
Yeah, it's certainly anyone who you can project for double-digit steals the rest of the way has to be, you know, inflated in value. Like I said, that's kind of why he was at number 72 on my hitters prior to the trade. Even with the playing time going down, if he doesn't start, he can certainly come in late situations and pinch run for somebody, which is definitely going to, you know, not take away from stolen base opportunities. If anything, it's only going to increase them, even if his playing time does decrease a little bit. So, I might not drop him all that much now that you mentioned that.
Jaime Garcia goes to the Twins. That was a move we've talked about for kind of the past week or so, that they were heavily rumored for a few days. And finally, that deal got done on Monday. AJ, the best I can say here, granted, I think he's a worthy streamer in AL-only leagues, maybe your very deep mix formats, but hey, he gets to team up with Bartolo Colon again.
Oh, the delight. Are we sure Bartolo's sticking around now that Garcia is there? I think the only reason they kept him around for another start was because the trade was taking so long to get through. But look, I am not a big fan of Jaime Garcia right now. I think his value actually goes down. He was not in my top 100 pitchers before the trade. I don't like him. Adding a DH to the mix certainly does not help me warm a fuzzy in his direction.
I'm with you. I think Cologne's probably going to get bumped at some point. Kyle Gibson actually was the one who was initially getting bumped, but very, very strange. Garcia's value, yeah, I'm with you. Going out of the NL East, not a plus. I just wrote a piece on projected trades that would be very beneficial for fantasy owners, so check that out. And in it, I pointed out that the NL East is still a beneficial division in which for pitchers to work. Granted, Garcia was having to face the Nationals there, so it's not quite as beneficial as if somebody switched to the Nationals and gets to face the other four teams. But I don't like his move to the AL Central. I think facing the DH, it's going to downgrade his value just a little bit. Let's talk about some of the other big names here. And Giancarlo Stanton, we got to get to this, AJ. He's got a major league leading 12 home runs in July, homered again yesterday. He's got four more than anyone else this month, and he's taken over the MLB lead with 33 home runs. And at the same time, I must point this out. In the past three seasons combined, he's played 64 of 169 Marlins games. It's 38%. And I don't know about you. I have a very hard time ranking this guy. I feel like when he's healthy, when he's playing like this, he's a top 10 overall player. But I just feel like I can't rank him better than 20th because of the injury concern. Am I overstating it?
You know, it's not like it's an injury concern, though, where Stanton's at fault or his body is at fault. I mean, there are some guys who, you know, like always get hamstrings. There are some guys who, like, the foot was always going out, the shoulder, the arm. There's always this sort of recurring nagging back injury with Kershaw that might become a thing going forward. With Stanton, he gets hit. That's not his fault. I mean, yes, you know, he leans in a little bit, but like a lot of the injuries have just because he's been hit by the ball, and I can't fault the guy for his bone breaking when he gets hit with a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. So, yes, there is an injury concern, but I'm not factoring that in his case.
In points leagues, where do you have him ranked right now?
I have him at number 13 amongst hitters. And so, you know, that's a top 20 guy.
Yeah, I had him top 22, just at the very end, exactly number 20, my number 8 outfielder. I want to believe I could make the case for more, and I certainly – look, I wouldn't sell. I'm with you. I think that a lot of the injuries have been just bad luck oriented. Let's have some more fun with the drops with the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal.
So we had one on Tuesday, which came by Bradley Zimmer, and then we had two of them on Wednesday. They were Steven Souza Jr. and Eric Hosmer, and Zimmer's the one, AJ, I want to focus on here. He has three straight multi-hit games, homered again on Wednesday. He has a .269 average, a .763 OPS, three homers, and five steals in his 21 games in July. More importantly, he's leading off for the Indians a good amount, and we've talked about how deep this lineup has been and whether this is going to increase his runs scored potential. Zimmer's looking like a pretty good player right now.
He's certainly on the rise. The opportunity availed itself. He's taking advantage of it. I mean, he is not getting any fantasy love. I don't know what his ownership is, but I know it's not nearly as high as it should be. I just picked him up in a points league that I'm in. I was stunned to see him sitting there on the waiver wire. And I needed to replace Abascal Garcia. So I jumped and snatched him up. I don't see why people are steering clear of this guy.
Bradley Zimmer is 16.8% owned. Incredible. I'm with it. I think he should be added in more leagues now. I think that this, at the very least, go ahead and juice the orange. Even if that's the minimum, you're going to be pleased with it. And this is a young player who does have an awful lot of upside. Maybe he's finally figuring it out. Speaking of figuring it out, although I'd argue this guy did it last season, I've got some trivia for you. Trivia, trivia that Eric won't know.
Yeah, yep. Where's Eric?
Yeah, I know. Where's Eric? I, you know what? I'm pretty confident he will not get the answer to this on this show today. All right. So what do you think, AJ? I'm going to be right on one thing on this show.
Fairly certain. You might go 2 for 2 here.
Since June 1st, five pitchers have a sub-250 ERA and at least 75 strikeouts. Four of them are Clayton Kershaw, Corey Kluber, Chris Sale, Max Scherzer, and the fifth is who?
The fifth is who? Trivia, trivia, trivia. AJ doesn't know.
Does he play for your Yankees?
He does not play for my Yankees. Yeah. Kyle, you should be very familiar with this guy. You like writing research points on him. Excellent, excellent info on this guy recently. Here's another hint for AJ. He was in close proximity to him within the past 24 hours.
Well, that really, is it Aaron Nola?
It is Aaron Nola.
Wow.
10 starts, .227 ERA, a .104 whip, and a .104 K per nine. And I want to throw in this little tidbit. Jimmy Nelson has a .303 ERA, .108 whip, and an .111 K nine in his 11 starts in the same time period. Fell short in this trivia, but hey, good performance there. But Nola, AJ, what do you think?
I think the strikeout totals are really impressive for him. He looked really good. We were at the game last night. We saw him pitch. I like the way he was mixing up his pitches, and he was actually getting squeezed pretty fierce by that home plate umpire. He probably could have had about three or four more strikeouts. So I was very impressed with what I saw. I do think he fixed in the beginning. I thought he was tipping his pitches a little bit, and I actually watched him fix it. I think the pitching coach kind of like spoke to him that his changeup, he was not landing in the same spot as he was with his fastball. I was a little concerned, but I was less concerned after I saw he fixed what was ailing him here. I have him, prior to the start last night, I had him at my number 18 starter going forward. I was only impressed with him after that first inning, so I'm certainly not lowering him.
This recent performance does remind me an awful lot of the first 2 months of last season where he was looking like, frankly, a top 15 starting pitcher. I'd love to put him there. I think on raw talent, when he's 100% fully healthy, no issues, I think he's got the kind of skill set that could put him in that class. And at the same time, it's hard for me in a roto context for the rest of the year to put him up that high. I want to make the top 30 starter case. AJ, I'm very excited too. I liked what I saw. We were getting a good vantage point on where we were watching him as well. He seemed to me like he was getting squeezed on occasion. Look, he still had a great outing otherwise. I mean, the Astros have been one of the toughest matchups this year to date. Granted, it would have been worse in Houston than in Philly, but I loved what I saw. It's a lot of positives.
Absolutely, and lefties were not picking up his changeup at all, and I thought that was very impressive that the other-handedness was not taking advantage of it.
So a quick note on the bad news front, Dansby Swanson, the very exciting prospect, unfortunately getting demoted to AAA Gwinnett. In the past 21 games, that was over the past month's time, he batted 119, and he had 22 Ks and 59 at-bats. Just not good. But this brings up the dynasty question, AJ, about Dansby Swanson. Just what does this mean for his long-term future? Are you still in, and to what level? What kind of ranking would you put from a dynasty angle?
Well, you know, with the thing with Swanson is that this can only help him in terms of a dynasty because he's not going to get the negative stats associated with his struggles this year. And going back down, hopefully he can rediscover, what made him such an appealing prospect in the first place. So I don't necessarily think you have to worry about it. He's come spring, he'll be here, especially if Brandon Phillips goes away, because if Brandon Phillips goes away, they can bring up, Albies, and then Swanson can come back and, they don't have to worry about it. So I'm not all that concerned. It can help. And I don't necessarily have him as a huge shortstop prospect anyway. If I were starting a league from scratch at the beginning of the season, I actually only had him as my number 12 shortstop. I didn't think he was ready yet. I didn't think he'd struggle this much, however. But I think it can only help him.
Do you think he's ever a top 5 shortstop in any given season? Ever?
No, but that's only because the offensive pop is not going to be there. I mean, you got, Correa, you got Lindor, you got Seager. That's three right there that he's probably never going to pass. And then you throw in a guy with the steals like Peraza, Andrews, like Semien. If Semien is back and can be healthy and go, 15-15, I don't think Swanson's going to be able to compete with that. I think he's a top 10 shortstop going forward. And so if you're in a 12-team league or a league, that goes deep and you need that middle infielder, I think he can contribute, but he's not anything in terms of one of these, oh my gosh, can't miss prospects that we're talking about with your Moncadas and your Devers.
Andrews is actually, I believe, almost exactly 5 years older than Swanson. And I think that his season so far is a somewhat good comp. The only thing I would not get on board with comparing this year is the steals. I feel like Swanson is capable of stealing more bases than he's shown to date, but he's just not doing it. So my concern, and AJ, I'd also put him only in my top 10, not the top 5, is that if he doesn't get the stolen bases and he's not a clear-cut 20-plus homer guy each and every year of his career, it will be tough for him to get up there. It's a very rich, young shortstop crop. So I'm not giving up on him yet. I'm concerned that he's going to need to have some like positive regression luck in some of his better years of his career. Want to finally throw a good geeky stat here. I love this one from Kyle.
The geeky stat of the day.
Holy freak out! The geek is gone for sure!
Kyle, I'll let you take this one away. I like this. The first time we've ever had two such platinum sombrero performances on the same day. Two guys struck out 5 times during their Tuesday games. Who you got?
First of all, I mean, how many games do you get 5 at-bats? Like, that's one thing. But to strike out 5 times in one bat, you're not, like, pinch-hitting for these guys at some point? Like,
I know. You can't pinch it for Nelson Cruz!
Well, I mean, at some point, like, if I'm playing in a major league game, and keep in mind, I've never played a day of baseball in my life, I'm just not going to swing, and I might get walked. Like, you know, scrunch up. You got a small strike zone or something. But to strike out five times in one game?
You've really never played a game of baseball in your life.
Did a lot of sports. I was a football, basketball, soccer guy growing up. Yeah, I never played baseball.
I think that's the breaking news here. Wow.
I know. I thought this guy was like a Little League All-Star.
I know.
You've never played baseball. Have you seen any movies about baseball?
Very few, but I will say I've seen more baseball movies than baseball games played in my career. So I guess that probably shocks the nation. Javier Baez was the other one.
Yes. What was the last baseball movie you watched? Even if it was a repeat, what was the last one you watched?
It would have been Field of Dreams, and I can't really confirm that may or may not be like the only baseball movie I've seen.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. AJ, what's the last one you watched?
Last one, probably The Sandlot, because my son, I'm catching my son up on movies that he hasn't seen, so I think probably The Sandlot.
Yeah, that was the last one I watched, too. They had it on one of the cable channels at some point.
So. And it really annoys me that he goes into the broadcast booth at the end and Vin Scully's not there.
But, I hate that ending so much.
Oh, yeah.
I hate the ending of that movie. I hate the ending of The Scout. The Scout's a terrible movie, but the ending is just... Oh, The Sandlot's ending is bad. Anyway.
But at least no one struck out five times in a game in The Sandlot. So.
I hear no love for Angels in the Outfield, and I'm concerned.
I saw that one time.
Fair enough. I have seen that one, so I can at least double my total.
Gary Coleman, kid from left field, anyone?
Oh, we're at least we got Field of Dreams mentioned here. We're going to get crucified. Kyle, never having played a baseball game. You know what? I bet I know why you didn't have the right socks for it, right? How often do you think about your socks, Kyle? If you're like I used to be, not much, but I recently discovered socks that changed the way I'll think about socks forever. They're called Bombas. Bombas are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. Made from premium cotton, Bombas stay warm in the winter and cool in the summer. And every pair comes with a built-in blister tab, innovative arch support, stay-up technology, and a seamless toe. With many colors, patterns, lengths, and styles, Bombas look great in the gym, at the office, and out on the town. Bombas are what feet daydream about. And for every Bombas purchase you make, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. Keep cool, keep comfortable, and keep contributing with the best socks in the history of feet, Bombas. Buy one pair or four at bombas.com/rose today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/rose for 20% off. bombas.com/rose. We'll be back after the stretch here with your hash browns and a look at the weekend schedule. I'm picturing that kid's book that I read my kids about socks, where the kid takes the boat across the river to go to the sock store.
That's some devotion for socks. Those better be some good socks.
I know. I'm thinking, I'm like, why would you go that far away? I just walk down the street, you know? Or I could order right here.
It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, socks get wet when you row the boat, and you need new socks.
Feels like a chicken and egg argument. Like, are you going to get new socks, or are you going because your socks are ruined on your trip to get socks? Like, it's
a chicka chicka boom boom.
This is a pessimistic look at the life of boating.
Fair enough. Not a fan of water either. I much prefer baseball to water.
What?
I can't swim, so you know.
You never played baseball. You never swim. What did you do in the summer?
I played basketball. And I researched numbers for you guys.
He's a land mammal. We're fine.
That is true. Kyle has always been researching numbers for us, even since he was a wee little tot.
Which some people still think I am for some reason. But anyway, we've got some questions here. Hashtag 06010MLB if you want to pose your questions to the guys. We answer them every Monday and Thursday. So I'm taking questions Sundays and Wednesdays. So look out for that and hit us with questions. Brant wants to know if he can give up on Jonathan Lucroy yet. The BABIP's low and the contact rate is fine, but his hard contact rate is eighth worst among the 221 batters with at least 250 plate appearances this year.
AJ, was Lucroy we were talking about Lucroy last night, weren't we?
A little bit. You know, we were saying that, you know, where could he get traded to potentially increase his value if he's going to get sent somewhere, and the Rangers certainly have not poo-pooed that possibility. So, yeah, we were talking a little bit about what he looked like in Coors Field, and it would be good because everyone would look good in Coors Field. But
you think?
But it would take something like that for me to like really put any faith into him turning things around at this point. He's a catcher. And if I only need one catcher, he's certainly not anywhere near the top of my list.
Robinson Chirinos on his own team has actually been performing quite well behind him. In fact, I'd argue he's had the significantly better season than Lucroy. I think it's pretty significant. It doesn't necessarily mean Chirinos is going to take over everyday starts from Lucroy, and he's going to be a little used backup. But, yeah, I'd love to see him go to Colorado. Hey, that'd be great. Maybe that would help kind of fuel his value here. But I'm worried that Lucroy is dropping into the clear-cut number two catcher pool, which means he's out of ESPN discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing Hector Sanchez more often than even considering him. So that speaks volumes, I think.
Let's go one step further to help Brant then. He says Matt Wieters, Russell Martin, and Mike Zunino are all on free agency. Who's he picking up in favor of Lucroy?
For me, it'd be Zunino, just because of the pretty high power ceiling.
Yeah, I'd pick any of them, to be honest. But Wieters, I have the highest of the three, but I have all three higher than him. So go for it.
All right, fair enough. We're just saving rosters here. Sammy wants to know about Ervin Santana after back-to-back rough starts. He's got a 5.46 ERA since June 1st after posting a 1.75 before it. Which version do we see the rest of the way?
Does it have to really be one or the other where he was clearly one of the top Cy Young contenders for, I believe it was, the full first 2 months, and then is, I can't even say borderline unusable. He's just plain unusable in an ESPN Standard League in the past 2 months using those numbers. Does it have to be one or the other?
I'm going to say yes. If you got to say closer to one side or the other, because obviously his skill set's somewhere in the middle of a 2.6 ERA, but if you had to pick, which side is he closer to? Cy Young or unrosterable?
Cy none. My take is I'm done with the guys who don't get elite strikeout rates. I'm done with them. They are just too variable. And that's what he is. He just does not miss bats. And it's not elite control either.
The thing is that the Twins, you look at their place in the standings, and even though they just traded for Garcia, I don't know that they necessarily are going to continue to buy at this point. They're two games under 500 and slipping. If they go, 0-6 in their next six, 2-7, August waiver trades are not outside of the realm of possibility, and I think Ervin could go in one of those deals. And if he goes to the National League, I might revisit him. If not, he is barely ownable right now, and so I don't see that situation changing if he stays in Minnesota.
I do want to see a little glimmer of hope with him, though. I mean, look, the guy has been a somewhat underrated pitcher for, I'd say, 2 to 3 years, but it's a lot of homework. It just is. Look at them. Kyle, I don't know if you've done any deep research things on Ervin Santana, but when I look at it, non-elite K rate, non-elite walk rate, non-elite ground ball rate, non-elite hard contact rate, where is he garnering the success?
Yeah, I haven't looked deep into it, but he's kind of been like this, right? I mean, he's never been the type of pitcher that you can rely on for an entire season. It's baseball, so anybody can have their stretches. The beginning of the season was obviously dramatic, but a 5.46 ERA over the last 2 months, that's 2 months of a sample size. That's not one or two bad starts. I'm worried. You're right. With the you can pay up to some extent if you know you're getting the strikeouts. The floor is there, but the way he's struggling right now, I think he's maybe fringe roster worthy, but it's a long time ago that we saw 1.75 ERA. That's all I'm saying.
Sure. And on top of that, the last time he made the All-Star game, which was 2008, he had 47 walks in the entire season for 219 innings. He's got 47 walks right now.
Yeah.
In 136 innings. The walk rate is also killing you, especially in points leagues. It's not pretty.
To be honest, though, in that year that you're talking about, his walk rate was not much different than it was this year. So I feel like he's really been the guy he's been. And if you want to look at it positively, 6 of the past 7 qualified ERA years, he's had an ERA between 3.25 and 4. Not bad, but not great.
All right.
Leave it at that.
Yeah, pretty much splitting the difference is the verdict here. So maybe on your roster, but not counting on huge things. Jordan wants to know who has the higher upside for the rest of the season and then in a keeper setting. Jacob Faria, who has 8 quality starts in his last 9, or Lance McCullers, who started elite, has a 9.88 July ERA. Fun note here, McCullough is actually 2 months younger.
So we're looking dynasty-wise?
Rest of the season and in a keeper format.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do the rest of the season debate, I've pointed out about just the workload management for McCullers, and let's not overlook that Dallas Keuchel's coming back. They got Colin McHugh back. They have other options to give McCullers some rest. But to me, this isn't even a contest for long term. It's McCullers all the way.
Well, I mean, I have McCullers higher right now for the rest of the season, even with the workload concerns. I think Freya had a really nice start. I was really high on him. I was excited to see him come up, and he's done great. But I also think there's a second time around the league kind of concern that you have with any young pitcher who comes up, and I haven't, you know, we need to see the data on that and see how he adjusts and how the teams adjust to him. So for right now, I can't make a future prediction, you know, on Freya. I think he is really promising, and McCullers has kind of proven it for a longer stretch, and right now I have to pick him.
All right, rapid-fire question from Leo in Bristol here. James Paxton or Lance McCullers in a long-term format?
I like where you're going here, Leo. It's McCullers for me for one reason. Now, granted, they both have some mild injury questions, but I feel like Paxton's has been a little bit lengthier of a concern. He's had a hard time getting anywhere near 200 innings. And I wonder at his age and this far into his career, which is a little further than McCullers, whether that's going to be an issue ongoing.
And it's Paxton for me, but it's close. It's very close. Mm. And it's, you know, again, more sample size. Let's see what these teams look like that they're on next year as well. So you can't project that far out into the future for starters because, you know, with the 10-day DL and all these arm woes that these guys get, you know, one pitch can spell doom. So I tend to not look more than the next season ahead with these guys. So it's Paxton for me right now, but like it's certainly not that different between the two.
Leo's a smart guy. I want to get his quick perspective on this because I hear he's in first place in a certain league where maybe I could steal McCullers from him. McCullers just stinks. You got to get rid of him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I should just give up McCullers for, you know, might as well just actually give you him for free.
Why not?
No, I'm a huge Lance McCullers fan, known around the office as a huge team McCullers guy. I've traded for him in multiple long-term formats because I think that he's one of the closest things we've got to like a future dominant ace. Like if he stops walking people, which he did for a while this year, and then that's kind of gone away a little bit. But like if he can not walk people and strike out 10, 11 per nine, like he's got really top level stuff that when it's on, it's as good as a Sale, Kershaw, Kluber level guy. But I got to put that all together, which he's got time to do.
Our very wise colleague Derek Carty has done some great research on Lance McCullers curveball, and what he said is right on. He possesses that elite pitch that could turn things into a Clayton Kershaw-like level of dominance. If he could only build up the stamina, Leo, like we're saying, if he could do that, McCullers could be something very special.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like you look at a guy like Paxton, and he can throw really hard, but is there that special pitch that stands out in today's baseball? Because there's a lot of guys that are coming up now who can throw as hard as Paxton does. There's not a lot of guys coming up who can throw a special curveball like McCullers does.
He still stinks, so you should trade me him for Ivan Nova. So, you know, why not? Anyway, we got
rejected.
Any more, or are we going to the schedule?
I've got one more for you, and it's just because you mentioned it earlier, and we know AJ has some Mets allegiance here. Ahmad Rosario, expected up in the next week or so. Windy wants to know, if we give him 125 at-bats, what numbers are we looking at the rest of the way?
What do we got,
AJ? Well, it's a big if, because, you know, he's hurt right, you know, he's ill right now, so he's not playing. They basically said that he's going to come up probably once the deadline passes, and I'm sure that's contingent on them actually getting rid of Cabrera, so opening up a spot for him in the infield. Look, this is a kid who is really good at making contact with the ball. He's going to steal bases. So 125 at-bats, I could see 10 stolen bases and a 290 average first time around if he gets the call in time to do it. It's the only question as far as I'm concerned.
Generous average there, though. That would make him pretty ownable across the board.
Well, but it's first time around average. Like, I don't think he's a 295 hitter in the big leagues. I think he's more of a 270 hitter in the big leagues long term. But for a short stint against September pitching, where you're going to get a lot of the AAA pitchers who he's already used to facing, and you know, the adjustments have been made, I think that makes a difference with these young kids. You know, if he's playing nothing but contenders and aces, then that's different. But given the NL East schedule and the fact that it's Washington and nobody else, I don't necessarily see him facing the contingent of arms that some of these other guys who are going into pennant races will be facing.
Yeah, I've got to scroll through that Mets schedule to know for sure. I keep thinking Max Scherzer's in that division. We didn't even mention Steven Strasburg, his injury. Ah,
mention it.
Yeah, well, I just did. I just did right there.
You're just going to mention it, but you're not going to talk about it?
No, I'm going to make AJ give us all the analysis.
Yeah.
He's injured. No, but I mean, Strasburg, I mean, he was experiencing the arm tightness in his last start and left after a couple of innings. Said that it was because he didn't work out and stopped his regimen during the All-Star break, which, you know, I was angry for. He says that this is just the one start and he'll be fine. Who knows if that's true? They're bringing up this kid from the minors, Fetty, who, you know, hopefully his whip will be good so we can call him Fetty Whip because, come on.
Oh, no.
It
sing for us.
Sometimes. But, oh. Yeah, hopefully this is just a short-term thing and he'll be back. But if he's not back after two starts, then I'd be concerned that he's not coming back until, you know, a long time, because he's saying that it's nothing. So when you say it's nothing and it's suddenly not nothing, I think it's a lot more serious than not nothing.
It's always nothing with Strasburg. I mean, every injury he's ever had, it's always been nothing. Never had any injury issues there. Nope, not going to happen.
Look, he's a top 10 pitcher when he's healthy and on his game. And unfortunately, he's not always that way.
Boy, oh boy. All right, well, we got a busy weekend schedule, so let's get to that preview here. Thursday, we've got 3 day games, so they're probably well underway as you're listening into this one. We'll see how Max Scherzer does in this game, the aforementioned big name. There's 5 night games on the schedule leading into a very big weekend here, and I'm going to go right back to what I mentioned a few minutes ago about Houston and their rotation. I pointed out about Philly that they were all good matchups except for some guy named Mike Fiers. Dallas Keuchel will return from the DL on Friday. He will pitch at Detroit. AJ, are you using him?
I am, only because they were very patient with him, and they could have brought him back 2-3 weeks ago, probably. He was fine. The pitch count was up, and they've just been patient because they have a lot of starters in their rotation healthy right now, and they're able to be patient. So I think this is one of those rare cases where the fact that he's on his first game back, I don't think there's any pitch count that's going to be an issue. I'm throwing him right back into the fire.
Oh, no. Killing me on my bad pick yesterday. The only big issue I have with Keuchel is just lefty against the Tigers. Tigers do hit lefties quite a bit better than the right-handed pitchers, but I'm with you. I'm starting Dallas Keuchel. I think he's got the potential to be a top 20 starter. I want to focus on this Tampa Bay at Yankees series. I think it's kind of interesting, the pitching stories on either side. As Kyle, you noted here, Chris Archer, 2.73 career ERA against the Yankees, will pitch in the series opener on Thursday. We have Masahiro Tanaka, who struggled at times going on the Saturday game. But a couple young players, and they're the lefties in this. I want to get your perspective on starts or sits. AJ, Blake Snell has got a 3.38 ERA over his past 3 starts. And Jordan Montgomery, who had that great game against the Reds earlier this week, is going to be facing the Rays, who tend to be a little bit more iffy against the left-handers on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's on Sunday, like you said. I mean, we're talking about a team that's iffy against the handedness, and we'll be resting some of the older players, as teams just are wont to do on Sunday. So I'm always more willing to take a chance on guys on a Sunday matchup, and this is no exception. I like Montgomery a lot. I think he's been doing well. There's a lot of good pitching on Sunday. You know, surprisingly, it's a pretty deep roster. A lot of players that we've already talked about in terms of McCullers is going and Paxton is going. You know, Verlander, if he's still with Detroit, this could be his last hurrah there. It'll be interesting to see how they're priced, and then that'll take a lot of my decision making into account there.
Does Verlander or Yu Darvish get traded, or do both, or do neither?
Well, I don't think that Darvish's hellacious fiasco last night has anything to do with whether or not he gets traded. It's just, you know, every pitcher We know what Yu Darvish is, and that game, you know, we could just as easily say he's hurt and has no stuff as it's in his head because he's worried about being traded. So I don't think we can take that and impact it one way or the other. I think he's probably traded. I think Verlander less so, but I think that's more of a contractual problem than it is, you know, a talent problem.
Agree entirely on both sides of that one. And I think Darvish is going to get traded regardless of this game. Frankly, if this does anything to decrease his value, people should be all over this. Buy low. I've been making the same point about Yonder Alonso. It's in my piece that's up there right now. But Darvish, two career starts with a sub-25 game score, and they both happened this month. There's your opportunity. You can go ahead and throw that stat at somebody if you want. He's got a 4.01 ERA. It's the first time he's had a 4-plus after tax day since his rookie year at any point in any season. This guy's great, and I think he's going to be just fine. Sunday, you mentioned, AJ, getting back to it. On Sunday Night Baseball, since I'm a company man, we have the San Francisco Giants at the Los Angeles Dodgers. It will be Matt Cain versus Hyun-Jin Ryu. I think the Dodgers overall in this series are going to get some good pitching advantages. The Giants have just struggled to hit, especially for much power. Granted, they make decent contact, but I do think there's opportunities for the lefties in the Dodgers series. We have Rich Hill also pitching in the Saturday game. In the Friday game, we have Alex Wood. I'd have to think all three belong in your lineup, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Ryu is certainly not one of these guys who I am making matchup proof just yet. I still want to see a few more starts from him before I'll do that, but this is a good matchup. And, you know, I think Kane's actually not a horrible play, but given how many good pitchers are on this slate, I will pass on him for this one.
So I want to run some starts and sits. The debuts are the guys I'm going to. Jaime Garcia will make his Minnesota debut in Oakland. That will be the Friday game. We're going to have Trevor Cahill pitching in Boston in the Saturday game. That will be his Kansas City debut. And I do believe the Padres were intending to throw Travis Wood, currently slated for the Sunday game at home against Pittsburgh. So, AJ, Garcia, start or sit?
I will start him, given the matchup.
I will as well. Oakland, I've pointed out, misses a lot of pitches. I'm with you there. We will go to Cahill's game at Boston.
No, thank you. Don't like him going into Fenway Park. No.
But he's facing Rick Porcello.
W.
Okay, so
give him the W.
I don't like either guy though. I think that's going to be. What do you think? Stack batters.
Mm-hmm, take the over to the bank. All that good stuff. It could be a very financially successful Saturday.
I'm still disappointed that our little board bet there is going to go bust. Because
man, you're not kidding. Chatwood's freaking screwing up in the bullpen.
You know, he actually could put up better numbers in the bullpen if they bring him back as that. That's going to be
a cheap way to win that bet. I'll even admit that.
Yes, it is. You know, did I ever tell you the one about the what was it, Ricky Nolasco against another Twins pitcher about who'd have the better year, and they were both negative on the player rater by a mile. The third guy, Travis Wood, home against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, a good park. Sunday night, Pittsburgh might be resting McCutcheon or someone like that. So I would take a chance on it. I'd look at, because it's a late game, you can't like look at the lineup because, you know, by then you'll probably be locked into a lot of stuff. But I would give him a shot, yeah.
Do you have a last-minute desperation Sunday pick? You mentioned Sunday has a lot of good intriguing matchups and people are often playing catch-up in the head-to-head games. Do you have somebody on Sunday you'd like to plug in who's widely available?
That's a very good question. I think...
Luis Castillo.
Really?
No.
Make the case.
Well, part of the case is he's available in almost 80% of leagues, but how can you not be impressed with what you've seen so far? He's promising to me. I'm not saying I'm locking him in, but if I'm chasing some upside on a Sunday at Miami, I'm not terrified. You mentioned Giancarlo Stanton, he might get hurt by then. Like, I mean, that's only a few days away. He could get hurt.
Sure, he might sit out. Sure. And all the outfielders might not be playing there. I might go with Cotton. In Oakland against Minnesota because Bartolo's slated to go.
You just like picking on Bartolo.
I do. Look, I've watched him for several years now prior to him leaving. And, if I'm not seeing him hit, it's no fun watching him.
If I'm going to go with a real desperate one, super deep, Martin Perez against Baltimore.
Yeah, I can see that.
I know it's a little nutty.
Well, Baltimore's not like the greatest thing since sliced bread these days, so I'm fine with it on that one. You know, if you want to avoid being like that, I would actually probably look to tonight's game with Perdomo going against the Mets. I think he's going to do well, and he's going up against a complete unknown quantity in Chris Flexen, the pride of the Binghamton Rumble Ponies.
Shout out to Upstate New York.
These minor yes. league teams, Rumble Ponies. But, you know, but a guy like that who there's absolutely no time to scout, I think can potentially get away with one time through the lineup, and it's a pitcher's part, so, you know.
I've literally had no time to scout Flexen.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and neither has anyone else. So I think these teams, they don't have the time to get a video on these guys who get called up from Double A on a drop of a hat. So
Kyle's had time. Well, he's been spending his summers doing this.
I mean, if I'm not swimming, what else am I going to do?
Exactly. Scouting Chris Flexen. Come
swimming
on.
Swimming in stats.
yeah, I like that, but not Flexen stats. Don't know much about him. I tend to agree that this could be a Perdomo spot. If you're desperate, it's kind of an ugly slate.
I'm going to take my Luke Weaver today instead.
Championship.
Yeah. He's legit. And so is Godley, though. That would be a good game.
That is. That's one of the beneath-the-radar pitching matchups. I think people are on board with Godley, though. What's his ownership percentage now? Let's see. 59%. Yeah. All right. Still out there in a couple of leagues. All right. Any other final thoughts on the weekend, AJ?
No. I just hope Adrian Beltre can keep the on deck circle in the proper place and continue his quest for history.
I hope he doesn't. How crazy was that for him to get ejected for that? That was, oh man, did that frustrate me.
Crew chiefs, ump show. I hear absolutely. That's a hashtag. I thought it was hilarious, but yeah, come on.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Baseball. Max Scherzer, happy birthday to Max Scherzer. He's starting probably as you listen to this, turning 33 right at the time. Pretty impressive. I also have to point out that the most important part of today, that it's Max Power's birthday. We all know Max Power, right? No? Nothing?
Cricket.
Tell us who he is.
Me and my ancient Simpsons references here. Leo, at least I thought I'd get you on this.
Nope.
No? Okay. Yeah. Now, there's actually a soccer Max Power, and it's his actual birthday today, and he learned that he was not named after Max Power in The Simpsons. So be it. Oh, well. It's National Coffee Milkshake Day. Cool. Got to go get one of those right
I drink your coffee milkshake.
Brings all the boys to the yard?
Oh, boy.
Okay. Kyle knows that song!
I know the song. That doesn't mean I was bringing it up.
I think we've hit our limit here, guys.
It's a great song. I like it.
Great is overshooting it.
That might be one of the lowest charting songs that absolutely everybody knows and loves.
Yeah, that's a good.
I'm not going to argue that.
It's the Shawshank Redemption of music.
What?
No?
Jeez.
All
right.
I hope this podcast ends soon.
I think it might right about here. Everybody have yourself a great weekend. Thanks so much to AJ Mess for joining me this week. Thanks to Mike Rabier behind the glass. Thank you, of course, to Kyle Sapi. Does great work with all of those notes, which he spends every second of his summer doing. Nothing else. Seriously, nothing else. Right?
Zero.
Nothing. And thanks, of course, to Leo Howell for joining us today and for giving me Lance McCullers on the cheap. We'll get that done right afterwards. In the meantime, enjoy your baseball. Take care, everyone. Everything is awesome. Darkness!